Run the Rose City by doing the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health. The marathon and half marathon both feature several crossings of Portland's iconic bridges and have a downtown start and finish. Use code AMR20 for $20 off registration at portlandmarathon.com. And hurry, there's a price increase on May 1st. Thanks to Chomps, tasty meat sticks packed with mouthwatering flavor for supporting our show. Go to chomps.com/AMR to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar. Start each day right with IQ Bar's brain and body boosting bars and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all types of their products. Get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. Just text AMR to 64000. Please listen all the way through this episode to hear Coach Liz talk about a book all about overcoming fear in this month's Miles of Books. Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined by Liz Waterstrat. Hello, Liz. How are you?
Hi, Sarah. Doing well. How are you today?
I am good, although the choice was to make my oatmeal and eat breakfast or take a shower before recording this, and I chose oatmeal. So, cool. Yeah.
Do you typically wake up at 9:53 a.m.?
I got back from my run at 8:45. I talked to my neighbors a little bit. Oh, I talked to several neighbors a little bit. And to cook my oatmeal, it's...
It's a little late for breakfast. I've already had lunch on my side of the world.
It's steel-cut oats.
Yeah.
So it takes at least 20 minutes to make it. So I chose food over shower to go back to your original question. So I am sitting here unshowered after a 5-mile run, in which, Coach Liz, I was practicing my new style of running. Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Tell us more.
Yes. So my physical therapist, Amy Benton, we'll hear more about her in a couple minutes. So I was having some tight hips, and the front of my hips were kind of tight. And she just also was shocked by how tight my quads were. And that, you know, when I pull my foot behind me to try to get my heel to touch my butt, she said there were 7 fists height between where my heel was and where my bum was. And she's like, no, that's way too much room. So she diagnosed me as a quad-centric runner. And so at my most recent appointment, she had me wear running shoes and my running clothes, and she looked at my running form and she was like, okay, we're going to get you so that you're running using the backside of my body more, meaning really firing my glutes a lot and my hamstrings and really pushing off through my big toe and rolling through on my foot like a leaf peeling off of the pavement. So we go outside. She has she works out of her beautiful converted garage, and she lives on this beautiful tree-lined street with these towering fir trees. And I turn to her before I'm going to try out this new way of running. I turn and I said, Amy, remember, old dog, new tricks. Mm-hmm. Meaning I had no confidence that I would ever be able to change my running style. Like, I don't know, Liz, if you know this, but Dimity, for when she was running, you know, she definitely tried chi running and was just always kind of focused on form and making changes as necessary and all this stuff. And I just always thought, oh no, there's no way. I like to go out and just be footloose and fancy free, enjoy whatever I'm listening to, you know, marvel at the dogwoods and the tulips and not think about my form. Well, my goodness, this old dog was able to change her form right then and there under the watchful eye of PT Amy. And oh my goodness, wow, I can't believe it. Like, I am able to run completely more efficiently with the same amount of effort. And so I debuted my new style when I was out in New Jersey for 10 days, seeing my son perform in Sophisticated Ladies. And oh my gosh, like, I was running almost a minute per mile faster with no additional effort and not trying to run faster at all. So
that's great. Yeah. You know, that's what you're looking for there. You're looking for that free speed because mm-hmm. you have better economy. So
mm-hmm. better
the cost economy. Of your movement mm-hmm. and you're leaking less energy mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. you have that better economy. Mm-hmm. You're not wasting as much energy. So it all goes into your speed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, I was not trying to run fast at all. I was out there. It's beautiful running out there in Montclair, New Jersey. You know, there's tons of pretty flowers to look at. It's gorgeous, gorgeous homes, the whole bit. And so I'm just out there enjoying my run, not trying to do any speed work whatsoever. And I look down, you know, and there comes up my split and I'm like, wait a minute, that is almost my race pace. And I don't feel like I'm racing at all. So I'm just stunned and amazed and wish I could turn the clock back. Oh, say, I don't know, 20 years to this to this new style of running and see what I could be capable of. So, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, all right. So here's the reason why we're going to be hearing from Amy Benton today. We are talking about returning to training and racing after an injury. And I'm going to admit, I have a somewhat selfish reason for doing this podcast. I signed up to run my first half marathon, the Portland Half Marathon, on October 6th. My first half marathon since, well, I can't even remember when, Liz. And this is definitely my first big train for it race since I was sidelined for almost a year due to bulging discs. So I've invited Amy Benton on. She is a doctor of physical therapy and co-owner of Prime Performance Physical Therapy here in Portland. Amy is a physical therapist I see on a regular basis, and I credit her wisdom, insight, and guidance for why I'm ready to resume training and racing. Amy was a professional dancer before becoming a physical therapist, and she now works with a variety of female athletes. A longtime runner, Amy is also the mother of two school-age kids, and you might remember her from her previous appearance on the pod when she talked about the sexy topic of bunions with Dimity and me. Welcome back to the show, Amy.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Okay, Amy, let's have a bit of a refresher. Can you remind us of your athletic background, including where you're at with your running these days?
Absolutely. I started out as a dancer. I danced professionally and collegiately, and I found running after working at the Boston Marathon medical tent and just got inspired. And from there, I have continued to dance, run 2 to 3 days a week, cross train by weightlifting and rock climbing.
Mm. All right. And how about your path to becoming a physical therapist? Because it seems to me that you passed through a genius portal from another universe as you are next level. You are so intuitive and observant. So tell us how you arrived there.
Well, from my years of dancing, I realized that I knew the body on another level, you know, this intuitive level from being a mover and working within the system for so long that physical therapy seemed like the next best career to have. So I went to school for PT and got my doctorate at Simmons in Boston. And from there, I just stayed curious about, you know, all the PTs can do, all the avenues that they can walk down, and just kept plugging away on manual therapy based practices. And, you know, to this day, I keep learning and growing. And I love it. I'm passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's evident. Yeah.
Amy, start with advice for finding a good physical therapist. Are there any questions you should ask to see if they are the right match for what you're looking for?
You know, I think the best is word of mouth, tapping into your crew and your tribe that love doing what you do. Find somebody that you feel knows your sport the best. Do they work with runners? Do they work with female athletes? Do they work with athletes of all ages? And finding somebody that speaks the same language is really important. Also, the time that they can give you. Do they work on a 30-minute, a 45, or an hour schedule? Mm. I am a firm believer that the longer you spend with your patient and getting to know them and their needs, the better the outcome. So I see people on the hour, and I believe that helps me provide the best care possible.
So if someone is recovering from an injury on their own without any guidance from a PT, what can they look for as, let's say, green lights for switching from regular running to being on a training plan with a race in mind? So not someone who's just resuming running, but someone who has been building back up their mileage and now wants to scratch that training and racing itch.
Yeah. The question in PT school was, you know, they'd ask a question, then they would say, well, it depends. So it's a very frustrating answer for somebody that just wants to get to the bottom of an issue. But it really does depend on who you are, your experience, your strength, how many races you've done in the past. But moving beyond that, there is a little bit of a, not a protocol, but a guidance that I walk through. So if you have done 8 weeks of the every other day running and you are pain-free and feeling good and you're ready for more and you're taking care of yourself, the nutrition, the sleeping, all the recovery greatness, then I would say you are safe or ready to begin taking that next step with your running coach or strength coach and getting on the training wagon.
Nice, nice. So I should have mentioned, Coach Liz, that you're sort of in the hot seat because I'm occasionally going to ask you to toggle from being co-host to being a guest. So I hope you ate your Wheaties this morning, not your steel cut oats. So jumping into having both of you answer questions, what mistakes have you seen runners make jumping back into training and racing after an injury that had sidelined them? And Amy, if you could take that one first.
You know, ultimately progressing too fast. We have a kind of a rule of thumb of no more than 10% per week. And even that can be pretty aggressive for returning after an injury. But progressing too fast, excessive downhill running, you know, we want to make a reasonable amount of fast-paced running. Adequate rest between workouts is really necessary. Running on softer surfaces than harder. Maximizing your sleep, your nutrition, avoiding overtraining. These are some of the things that I see get people in trouble as they try to progress after an injury back to race pace or running.
Okay, Liz. I know Amy took a lot of the answers there, but...
Well, I would say one of the biggest things I see is when the runner doesn't lower their expectations a bit. And that comes from this drive to compare themselves to where they once were and to feel like if they aren't there, they don't get back there quickly, they're somehow failing at what they're trying to do. So I would say just lower the bar and to, you know, more than ever, just enjoy the journey of becoming almost a beginner again and settling back into things and just being mentally and emotionally okay with that.
I love that, Liz. Can I add that?
Thank you.
You know, my motto, and Sarah has heard this 1,000 times, is meet your body where it's at today. We can't expect it to be something it's not. And you're just going to take that each day. And what are we going to do today? How are we feeling? And it's a marathon, not a sprint. And every injury becomes an open door to learning about yourself and bettering yourself, making you a more efficient mover, a more efficient athlete. And that's kind of helps to set the mindset up. So we're just more patient with ourselves. I love that.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm glad you all talked about mindset, because what advice do each of you give for overcoming the fear of re-injury that, Amy, you know this, it haunts the heck out of me. And I go to that dark place immediately when, you know, my back just speaks to me quietly. And, you know, I suspect I'm not the only runner who has that concern of re-injury. So Coach Liz, how about you go first this time?
Right. It's so normal after an injury to just kind of move forward with fear. And I think when you do that, you really tense up and you can even create the conditions for another injury to occur. So it's really just learning to, you know, relax into the process, to find the joy again and the freedom in your running. And to keep in mind too, that while sometimes injuries have causes, I think the most reassuring thing a podiatrist ever told me after exhausting a search for a specific reason I get injured, they said to me, you know, Liz, sometimes things just happen and that doesn't mean they'll happen again. So just finding a way to just relax into things and not move with the fear, move with joy instead.
Amy?
Yeah, you know, there's a mental shift happening for patients and athletes. So we no longer use the RICE method. Now it's moved into the PEACE, P-E-A-C-E, where we protect, we educate, we adapt, we compress, we elevate, but we also think positively about our situation in our body. And we know from the pain neuroscience research that that has profound impact on the way that we can move forward after an injury, giving your body that that truth that it is powerful and it can overcome and it heals every single day. Just helping your athletes and your patients remember that has become a bigger part of my practice than ever before.
Well, I think that goes back to the finding the right PT, because hearing you say that, Amy, I thought, you know, that's one of, you know, you give such great advice and, you know, always new exercises, seeing new things that I can work on, but also supporting my natural positive outlook. Just that's a support that means the world to me and that I hope other people can find. You know, it's just and to know that science is validating the positive outlook is like, oh, okay, I'm not just out here being a Pollyanna, but that the brain can actually help you get back to what you love doing. That's important. So, okay. So I think this question might just be for Coach Liz, but Amy, please chime in if you have anything to add. So when starting race-focused training, how far should a person go back to the beginning of their training relative to how long they've been off? And put another way, you know, you talked about that beginner mindset. When is one a beginner runner again?
It's a good question. And I think it really depends. It depends on what the injury was. If we're looking at someone who had a bone stress injury, I do think they go back to square one, where it's really just about, you know, building from the ground up. First, you have to get through walking, then you're doing short run segments, and then you build up, and then you can start adding speed and getting race specific. If it's someone maybe who had some type of tendon overload thing, I feel like in those cases, it really depends how far back they need to go. And it's more of finding that balance between how much load can we put this person under and how is their body responding? And sometimes you have to take that day by day, run by run. So I don't think that there's a formula for this, which I know is really frustrating when runners are coming back. They want certainty. They want to know, tell me where I'm going to be 4 weeks from now and will I be okay? And so it's just a really patient process, no set formula. But I would say don't be afraid to go back to square one and rebuild and do it, I hate to say the right way, but do it in a better way than maybe you've done it before. So addressing those peripheral factors that Amy had said, like, you know, nutrition, strength training, mindset, sleep, recovery.
Amy, did you have anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I was just, you know, when we last worked together, you were saying how, you know, your hip flexors were always tight and this, you know, kept being the case. And so we decided, hey, let's take a look at that running gait, right? Mm-hmm, slow-mo this video. Let's break it down and see what is causing it. Because oftentimes how we train is how our body gets built up or broken down. So like Liz said, go back to the beginning. Let's see what you're doing with every stride that may, you know, help you or hurt you. Mm-hmm. And so we found some things that Sarah could work on that now she's, you know, she's crushing it. So restarting is great.
My cheerleader. Thank you.
Oh, got you.
Okay. So another question for both of you. When returning to training for a race after an injury, do you need to have a longer training cycle, like to make up for lost ground? Or then I was thinking, well, no, maybe you need to have a shorter one to avoid putting, you know, too much stress on your body. So, Amy, how about you take this one first?
Yeah, I really think it depends on the injury and what got you kind of in hot water to begin with. We know that the cardiovascular and respiratory system adapts faster than our joints and our bones. And I think that's really important to remember, because you're going to feel like you are ready. Your limiting factor is no longer your heart and your lungs. You know, let's do this. But those joints need a little extra time and some more days off to adapt to the stress and the load that you're putting on. So I really have to say it depends a little bit on your experience level, your proficiency in running gait pattern, the type of injury, and then how strong you are coming out the gate. You know, are you new to cross training and weightlifting? If so, it's going to take a little bit longer and it's going to look different. I do tend to err on the side of, you know, for our female athletes, let's lift a little heavier, but do less repetitions so that as a healing tissue, we get some of that strength adaptation, but we're not banging away at that, say, meniscus. So I'm, you know, shifting and changing depending on who's in front of me.
Liz, what are your thoughts, coach?
Completely agree that it depends. But like Amy, I would be more conservative and I would take your time, because you don't want to end up in the same place or with something new that you have to address, which is always the risk when you rush things back. So get your body strong again, resilient, and let it make adaptations on a reasonable timeline.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break to hear from some great deals from the brands that support our show. Stay with us. For $20 off Portland Marathon registration, use code AMR20 at portlandmarathon.com and register soon. There's a price increase on May 1st. I hope this episode has your engine revved to race. I know mine is. I've signed up to run the Portland Half Marathon, part of the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health on Sunday, October 6th. It's my first half marathon in, 8 years. Giddy up. There are so many reasons why I opted for the Portland Half Marathon. Like the marathon, the half marathon course is beautiful, fast, and a fun way to see my beloved Rose City. Since Portland is bisected by the Willamette River, both the full and half marathon have numerous bridge crossings, yet the maximum course elevation is a mere 178 feet. Both the marathon and the half marathon start and finish downtown. Plus, Portland weather works in the participants' favor, usually moderate temps and dry skies. Historical temperature averages for race day are a low of 50 and a high of 67 degrees. Historical chance of precipitation on race day is roughly 25%, although that's typically really early in the season for us to get wet weather here. Come chase your 13.1 or 26.2 dreams here in Portland on Sunday, October 6th. Join me in the Rose City. Register today at portlandmarathon.com and use code AMR20 for $20 off registration. Again, go to portlandmarathon.com, use code AMR20, and you'll save $20 off registration. And register ASAP. There's a price increase on May 1st. I know I'm not the only runner who thinks about protein. The benefits of a protein-rich diet are abundant. Weight management, better metabolism, hormone regulation, bone health, and post-workout recovery. Yet many of us aren't getting enough protein in our diets as is. Enter Chomps. We've teamed up with Chomps, and they have a great offer for you to try them out. Go to chomps.com/AMR to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. Chomps are simply made with natural ingredients. They come in three types of meat: grass-fed and finished beef, venison, and my favorite, antibiotic-free turkey. They're filled with the highest quality, sustainably sourced meat and no fillers, so you can feel good about what you're snacking on. Discover how good healthy snacks can taste with Chomps, available in 10 delicious bold flavors, so there's a healthy snack option for everyone. Or grab a variety pack to satisfy your whole family's taste buds. There are even smaller Chomplings for a quick snack for any kids in your life. I'm forever looking for filling, nutritious, and tasty snacks for my hard-dancing college-age son. Chomps are ideal for him. He can eat them on the go, and they provide his hard-working body with much-needed protein. Right now, Chomps is offering our listeners 20% off your first order and free shipping when you go to chomps.com/AMR. Go to chomps.com/AMR to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. That's chomps.com/AMR. Remember to use our link so they know we sent you. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar. Now get 20% off every IQ Bar product, plus free shipping, when you text AMR to 64,000. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQ Bar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb grab-and-go breakfast, and their IQ Joe mushroom coffees are packed with magnesium and lion's mane adaptogen to keep you focused all day long. More than 10,000 five-star reviews and counting. To fuel my run, swim, or pickleball games, I grab and enjoy an IQ Bar. There are 8 tasty flavors to choose from. My current fave is almond butter chip with tasty dark chocolate chips. Mmm. Today, our listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text AMR to 64,000. The Ultimate Sampler Pack is a fun way to try all IQ Bar products and flavors. All IQ Bar products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. They're also vegan and low in sugar. Whether you're running a marathon or running errands, IQ Bar empowers doers with superior brain and body nutrition. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks. And now, our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text AMR to 64,000. Get your discount. Text AMR to 64,000. That's AMR to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Amy, what should folks do when other aches and pains pop up as they are trying to return to running? So put another way, at what point do you decide to take even more time off or just scrap a race?
I would watch out for the pain that keeps you up at night, the one that continues multiple days after you've been resting. I use a 2-week rule for my athletes for acute or chronic injuries that if your body is not cleaning up the injury after 2 weeks, 14 days is the inflammatory period where your body does all its cascade of events to heal you. And if it's still bothersome and it's still painful, then you do need to seek help because the body's not going to do it without some assistance. Mm-hmm. Things that are nerve-based, sharp, shooting, tingling, and numbness, that's a sign that the nervous system, the nerves of the, you know, low back all the way through the glute is shouting for help. And so I would seek help with that. But once you have an injury and you realize, wow, this is not going away, you can error detect or detect, oh, this feels similar to that. I should reach out to my PT or my healthcare provider for some more guidance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of on the flip side of that, Amy, as a PT, how do you support or not folks who love running so much they push through an injury that'll never heal on its own? Like in the early days of AMR, Dimity and I traveled to a lot of race expos and met numerous women. So awesome. And so many of those women had trained and were racing with an acute case of plantar fasciitis. And as someone who has had it twice, I just was like, oh, no. It's making my foot hurt just talking to those people. So, you know, that's just one example. What are your thoughts on people who, you know, kind of refuse to say no and sit it out for a while?
Oh my gosh, it's all about the long game. We our lifespans are, you know, getting longer. We want to be active for longer in our lives. Why waste it all on that one race when you can go in strong and you can enjoy it more if you're not in pain? So get it figured out. Look to the next race where you're feeling good, but don't throw it all away and limp through pain because that can ultimately lead to compensation and another injury that you're going to have to milk. So it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And you want to go in the best you can be because that's why you're doing it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Yeah.
So keeping up with the never give up or never surrender mentality, we know many folks in our community want to continue exercising when they are in a boot and waiting to get back to running and walking. So what's your stance on that practice? And what are some ways you would suggest they stay strong and motivated when someone is feeling frustrated at what they can't do?
Yep, I have a whole slew of movement exercises that I give people in a boot specifically. Because, you know, in the first phases, we need your body to have all its capacity and all of its resources to heal that bone or that tendon. So we don't push too much, but we do give you something to chew on to keep you strong. You can do core, you can do hip work, you can do upper body. But again, you don't want to overdo it because you're pulling from the resources that are trying to heal that tissue. So in the right time, at the right load, in that recovery process, we are working out in that boot, absolutely, to stay strong so that when you come out of it and we start loading that leg again, you're ready for it and you can progress a little bit faster because you've done some work up front.
Yeah. And that just takes me back to when I had my fractured ankle where I had to have surgery for it. And so let's talk about mindset. So do either one of you have any insight or advice on getting that training back into that training mindset after a layoff? I always find it a bit of a catch 22 that I miss running so much when I can't do it. But then when I return to running and training, a part of me is like, oh, I wish I could sleep in again. Like that was kind of enjoyable.
I would say taking your rehab or recovery practices as training. So staying in the habit. So let's say you get up every morning and you're used to running 30 minutes every morning. So in that case, every morning you would get up and do 30 minutes of your rehab exercises or your core exercises. That way you maintain the habit, which is really what keeps you going. And one of the most enjoyable things about running is that it's a habit, it's healthy, it starts your day off right, or you go out there with friends. And even if, you know, you can't go out there running with your friends, then keep those things in there that you like about running. So maybe you join some type of like core strength class or Pilates if you're permitted. But I would say just keep up the habit so when you return to running, it's not such a drastic difference.
I think that's marvelous. Absolutely. As humans, we're creatures of habit and we do like routine and we do thrive in that. So keeping your mindset right where you would be, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Well, I feel that validates my 30 to 40 minutes of PT I do every morning in my bathroom.
I do try to keep it only to 40. You know, there's definitely a PT burnout realm that all athletes that have been through an injury have, and that can really stunt the growth mindset of getting back. So I do believe that, you know, keeping it fresh, keeping it lively, looking at different things along the way keeps you interested and engaged. So I do try to make sure that that is part of our world.
Although I do sometimes feel, I wonder if it's a crutch. Like I think, oh, I have to do all these because otherwise the magic is going to wear off and then my injury will come back. So I, you know, it's like I'm holding on to the side of the pool. I don't want to let go and go doggy paddle in the middle of the water for fear I'm going to sink back under or something. That was a whole lot of analogies, but
there is a little bit of that because some people do need consistency in, you know, what they're working on. And it's the classic, oh, I felt better. And then I stopped doing my stuff, which sometimes you can get away with and sometimes you can't, but it does depend on what you're working on. And I wanted to go back to the topic, Sarah, you had highlighted so well. You one morning were freaking out about your back. You were really worried and you were trying to get on the schedule. And well, I guess you didn't even think about
I know.
Me in your back pocket.
I didn't immediately like think of you. Out.
and then your pain dissipated when you realized, oh, wait, I have somebody in my corner. I can call Amy and we can figure it out. Just knowing somebody was there to help you, your pain decreased.
It's true that so my back pain, it was not the same type of back pain, but back pain returned on a Monday after a run. And boy, by Tuesday, it was bad. And I had sunk into a very dark place, which is not someplace that I typically go. And it was just like, what can I do? Not sure why you didn't jump to my mind right away, Amy. I'm so sorry. But then in the middle of the night, when I was like, I'll call Amy and I'll go see her. And the next morning, I felt, like you said, I felt so much better when I woke up. And I was like, okay, now I need to carry through on the plan because just thinking of Amy isn't enough, but it sure did some good.
I wish it was. It'd be a lot cheaper.
Save me the drive to the west side. Yeah.
Oh, so. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. But that speaks to the mental game so clearly, that, you know, the neuroscience of pain, where just knowing we have support and can make us feel better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've spoken a few times about surgery, and we had a question from someone on the AMR Facebook page, and they said they know they need to have surgery on each foot in the next few years, one at a time. So do you have any advice on how to prepare ahead to recover and get back to activity? You know, not in the sense that you can bank fitness, but is there anything they can start to do now to prepare?
Yeah. The stronger you go in, the stronger you will come back out. Mm. We do know now from a lot of research, so much research that the insurance companies now require prehab before certain surgeries. They know the benefit of building up the tissue and the overall fitness of the patient. The surgeons know that their outcome will be better. So OHSU here in Oregon, we'll say that, you know, you need 6 weeks of PT before we do the next step.
Wow.
So absolutely, I think you can bank fitness. And out of the words of my famous trainer, you know, you want to be harder to kill. You want to be as strong and resilient as you can be, because then whatever's thrown at you, especially a surgery, which is a trauma to the system, you will be more resilient.
Oh my goodness, harder to kill. That made me laugh. So
yeah, can you run fast? Get away from that cheetah? Yeah, runners.
Oh, you took me right to the veldt. I was there. There was a lion lurking behind that tree.
Motivation.
Yes. So okay, so any final bits of wisdom or advice from each of you? Amy, starting.
I think slow and steady wins the race. Slow build up. If you feel like you need guidance, reach out, because we sometimes get into our own heads and we forget how we felt. I would say document what you're doing so that you can look back if you have setbacks and say, oh, wow, yeah, I did run, you know, back to back. No wonder why I'm feeling X, Y, and Z. Listen to your body and take it slow and steady, because you will get there.
Liz?
Yeah, I would say to just make sure you learn from every injury. There's not always a reason, but often there are some precipitating factors. And the worst thing would be to go out and make the same mistake all over again. So learn the lessons, learn them once, and grow from them.
I like that. All right, well, that's the note we are going to end on, ladies. Thank you so much to both of you.
It's been a pleasure. Great talking to you.
Oh my goodness, we had such technical issues recording this that I kicked Liz off before I could have a little outro chit chat. So this is just me. And I want to say that I am feeling you all coming back from injury. I am completely in the same boat as I embark on this journey to train for my first half marathon, the Portland Half Marathon. So I feel you. You can keep up with us on our social media. And as Amy was saying, it's important to know you're not alone, whether that means you got a great PT, whether you got another mother runner, whatever, we're here for you. All right. And we could literally be there for you in Lake Placid, September 6th to 9th. We're having our annual retreat there at a beautiful, the High Peaks Resort. It is right in town. Lake Placid is a charming village steeped in Olympic history. They've had two Winter Olympic Games there. And our hotel is right on Mirror Lake, which is a beautiful boat-free lake that in early September will still be warm enough to swim in. I know I plan to do a lot of open water swimming at our retreat, but if that's not your jam, there's plenty of running. We will be doing yoga. We bring in expert speakers, have great meals, loads of laughs. It's just a really fantastic time to get together with like-minded people, make new friends, go with relatives. We oftentimes have a niece and her aunt come to our retreat. Shout out there to Linda and Laurel. So yeah, and also remember, it's easy peasy to pay for our retreat in installments on our site using Affirm. So for all the details and to register, go to anothermotherrunner.com, click on events, you'll see the Lake Placid retreat there in our dropdown. Again, go to anothermotherrunner.com. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Medora from Fire on the Bluff. ain't nothing weird going on here. Nope. No, sir.
Like we're in some alternate dimension of some podcasting universe here on Riverside. Just do the whole podcast of outtakes today.
Well, thanks for staying with us. This is Miles of Books, our bonus monthly segment. That's a quick conversation with Liz Waterstrott, a coach in our Train Like a Mother club. And as you know, one of my occasional co-hosts. So hello to you again, Liz.
Hi, Sarah. Again.
again. So, okay. So what book are we going to be chatting about today?
We are chatting about a book entitled Fearless, Face Not Good Enough to Replace Your Doubts, Achieve Your Goals, and Unlock Your Success by Dr. Pippa Grange.
All right. So I love that clever title. It is Fearless, two words, not to be confused with the adjective fearless, as in, of course, the 2008 Taylor Swift album and titular song. Woo, woo. Yes. So you'll just ignore that I said that because I don't think you're a Swiftie. So, okay. So who is this Pippa Grange? Such a great name.
Yeah. I heard Pippa interviewed on another podcast sometime last year. She's a doctor of sports and performance psychology. She's worked with many elite teams and businesses and performers. And she's a soccer player, and she's credited with playing a major role in England's unexpected success in, I believe it was the 2018 World Cup.
That's so exciting. So she's legit. She's the real deal. So, all right. So Liz, the all important, what's the page count here?
219.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Does the cover say Liz Waterstrott, book is for you? I mean...
I did like the cover. It's yellow, and there's not a lot of yellow books out there. So I wonder if there's some type of marketing scheme to that one. But I did find this was a very easy read, and but not like a fluffy read. There's a lot in here, but it's not something that you're going to need to commit to for the next month.
Okay, very good. Okay, so lay it on us. What does Pippa have to say about fear and how it limits us?
Well, Pippa says that, you know, fear uses up a lot of the space that we might otherwise use for broader, less goal-oriented ambitions. And she said that if you're always trying to reach and to demonstrate success, you're really missing out on, here's my favorite word, the journey of experiencing yourself and others and just simply exploring the world. So too long don't read. When you let fear rule your life, you're missing out on so many of the beautiful things about life and opportunities that are in front of you.
Mm-hmm. And I understand she kind of outlines why fear is limiting.
Yeah. You know, she just kind of goes through it and breaks it down and gives you some research too about how fear is keeping you small and it's betraying your trust. It shackles your expectations and it just kind of spoils your fun. You know, life, and even when you think about it in the context of sports, when you're operating from a place of fear, it just makes the whole experience very threatening versus when you let some of that fear go, you have this beautiful challenge in front of you where you get to display really great parts of your personality and just take in what all of what the experience has to offer.
I love your idea of saying that facing a challenge lets you be reminded of facets of your personality. I think I had a poster on my wall sophomore year that said, we're constantly invited to be ourselves or something along those lines. I think it was Dryden who said that. Anyway, tangent.
Yeah.
So talk to us about some ways to achieve success, even in the face of fear.
Well, you know, one of the big things that she says over and over again in this book is get into the mess. That is the key to success. So if you're always hiding when there is struggle or suffering, you miss out on all of the opportunities for healing and fulfillment and joy and growth. So invite that struggle, get into the mess. It will force you to find a solution and access some of those wonderful parts of your personality that sometimes never even come to the forefront unless you're put in that uncomfortable situation. And think about, especially as you get older, you get so comfortable and there's less and less opportunities where you can showcase some of your best features. You know, maybe you work really well under pressure. Or maybe when everyone else is like in turmoil, you can just be stoic in the eye of the storm. And some of those things don't come out unless you are struggling or under stress.
I have to say that's one of the many things I love about Dimity is she's not afraid to kind of jump in, figure things out. And that I was always very tentative to do that. And so over the years with AMR, she's really encouraged me to do that. So, in, you know, what are some of your beliefs about success in regard to fear?
Well, she said that we all tend to have these misconceptions about success and the intersection of success and fear. So, you know, we tend to think that fear is not valuable. And she counters that with, you know, the best attitude for failure, if you're worried about not succeeding because you're fearful, is someone who willingly invites it. And she also said that some of us believe that only the fearless survive. And she said, you can move forward with your fear. You know, some of the best winners out there are creative. They're willing to change. They use that fear as a catalyst for changing and adapting and moving on. And lastly, you know, she said that a lot of people think that you need to sacrifice in order to be successful. And if you're not willing to go all in, you will never be a success. And she said that's really not realistic. You don't need to go all in or be perfect to have any sort of success.
I think the more times we can reiterate that message that there's no need to be perfect and that's not what we should be striving for, I think that's important.
No, and I think, you know, I was talking to a swimmer last night and he had a hard practice. You know, all of the swimmers on our team are getting ready for state. And, you know, a lot of people when they're tapering, especially in swimming, they just don't feel great. And so he didn't feel great and his times were slow. And he said, do you ever feel like not racing because your preparation isn't going well? And really what he's saying is, are you ever so scared about failing that you don't even want to start? And I think it's a very normal feeling, but if you let the fear rule you, you never get that opportunity to maybe be great or maybe excel under stress, pressure, or maybe, you know, succeed when all odds were against you. And those are really powerful experiences. And they were worth more than just playing it safe and staying at home and not even stepping up to the start block or start line because you're so scared of that failure or not being perfect.
Yeah, I used to think that all the time when I would watch the Summer Olympics and see those swimmers on the starting blocks that you talked about. And I would feel so nervous and scared for them. And I mean, as if my life depends on whether, you know, Michael Phelps can get yet another gold medal. And finally, I'm like, oh, I bet they kind of like that. Like that they're excited that finally that day is there and they can see what they're made of and see if they've got what it takes. And, you know, certainly I still get nervous, foolishly, but that's the thrill of sport. But yeah, that you know, stepping up is important.
Yeah. I was talking to an athlete yesterday. She's doing Ironman Texas this weekend. It's her first Ironman. The forecast is 89 degrees.
Oh.
That's not exactly like optimal Ironman, first Ironman conditions.
Yes.
And so she, you know, we finished talking about everything and she goes, I'm really anxious. And I said, of course you are. You really care about this. And, you know, the key is to use that anxiety to narrow your focus on the things that are important that you can control for race day and to welcome that anxiety, to let it, you know, empower you. And we talked about how once she gets to the finish line or even the start line, a lot of that anxiety starts to dissipate. And she was saying how, you know, once you get to that finish line, you have this whole day where you get to see what you're made of and you hate it. Sometimes you hate it when you're out there and when you're doing it, but then you reflect back on it and you think, wow, like I really got to see what I was made of today. And I feel like unless it's something that we don't welcome in life, like somebody gets sick or something really tragic happens, we don't have a lot of opportunities for those in our adult life. So the fact that we as athletic people willingly put ourselves into those situations, I just think it's such a neat thing about our personalities.
It is. And I got to say that I always forget how much I enjoy the challenge of a race or a hard workout even. And I just, when hearing you talk, I was reminded of the race when we were at the quarter marathon at our first Hilton Head retreat. And I had a really, just for me, a great race. And I'd been so long since I'd stepped up to a starting line. And I just was so hopped up afterwards in such a good way. I was like, yeah, yeah, I love this. And it was like, mm-hmm, yeah, you'd forgotten that, hadn't you, Sarah? Oh my goodness. So last question. I understand that the author lays out some questions to uncover one's fear. So what are a couple of those ways?
She does. She offers a lot of really good reflective questions. And I think it's to identify who you are when you're afraid, so you can recognize how almost dysfunctional it can be at times. And so, you know, she challenges the reader to question, how does fear change your behavior or your mood or your energy? Or where, in what situations does fear make you want to quit? Mm-hmm. And what do you have to leave behind? I like this one. What do you have to leave behind if you let go of your fear? I think some of us cling to the narratives we have about ourselves, like, mm-hmm. oh, I can't do that. I could never apply for that job, or I could never finish an ultra marathon. Mm-hmm. And she's just saying, what if you just left those behind? You know, mm-hmm. what would happen? Mm-hmm. And just really to kind of dig into, what is your fear actually costing you? What are you missing out on because mm-hmm. of that fear?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Liz, I'm so glad you chose this book to talk about. I think it's also the perfect kind of companion to the topic we just had on the podcast. So I think this book, I mean, it's only 219 pages, but it sounds like it really packs a lot in there. So thanks for cluing us in and sharing about it with us.
Thank you for letting me share it. Mm.
It is. We did pivot awfully fast from oatmeal to the
steel cut oats. I was going to razz you about the steel. Like, I could just see you stirring your oats on the stove.
Oh,
with
yes,
your
ma'am.
Spoon.
You got it. Were you there? Oh my gosh. Like
the schooner, the prairie schooner, pulls up in the front of your house. Come on in, Sarah. Bring your oats.
Bring your hardtack. Ma has some salted pork.
We're going Jersey to get your letter.
Tie it all together with a big, nice bow there, Liz.
I'm killing myself today. Oh, geez. Gosh.